Hi, this is Rhea Stevens.
This is Bobby Rydell.
Hello, my name is Samara Joy.
This is Al Hurt.
This is Jane Monheit, and I hope all of you listeners are having the most beautiful holiday season ever, and especially enjoying all of that wonderful holiday music. You're listening to The Sounds of Christmas.
Podcast.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to The Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. I'm very excited to have today's guest back with us. She's someone that Aaron over at Marian Bright says is an extraordinary singer and songwriter of many a Christmas song, supporter of the Christmas music community, and a fabulous human being. Rhea Stevens, welcome back to the Sounds of Christmas podcast.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And, you know, I don't want it to sound like you're pigeonholed as a Christmas music artist. That's certainly how I found you. And I think the majority of the stuff that you've released so far is Christmas related, but you've done other things too. And it's, you know, everybody who listens to this podcast and listens to the Sounds of Christmas station probably also listens to non-Christmas stuff. I get that. I do. So we all do. I want to talk about the new Christmas single, but first, the other singles that have come out already this year. Let's start with Black Dog. What's that one about?
Sure. Well, I mean, it's obviously about depression, and yeah. So I don't know if I can't remember the last time that we spoke about this, but I moved in 2022 from Los Angeles to Northern California. And that was one of the first songs that I wrote when I moved up here. Depression runs in my family. And in my immediate family, I have somebody in my family who has bipolar depression. And I've grown up with this individual, and I think that I had somehow blocked out a lot of that experience. And then when I moved back up north and was close to family again, it reminded me of, oh yes, this is how it is to walk on eggshells. This is how it is to feel like, you know, you're constantly monitoring the mood and the emotions of another person, and in turn, how that, I think I recognized how that had shaped so much of my emotional makeup as an adult. I kind of went, oh, that's why I do that. This is where I overcompensate. This is where I, and honestly, it was kind of like being around that all the time. And I'm not shaming anybody with depression, because I understand, and I've certainly gone through my bouts with it as well. But I think that making Christmas music and the desire to make so much Christmas music, even as a kid, and to listen to it, it just lifted me out of sadness. It lifted me out of the gray, you know, the gray of the eggshell walking, really. So it's been wonderful to make all this Christmas music and create these fantastical images and really live in that spirit for months and months and months on end and years while making that music. But Black Dog is saying, oh, okay, this is like, sometimes when you're the one struggling with depression, the black dog is scratching at your door. When you're living with somebody that has severe depression, that black dog is knocking at your door. And it's, so that's what that song is about.
Two things. First, for those who have not been to California, moving from LA up to Northern California is huge. California is a giant state. I have had, when I lived in San Diego for a long time, and I had friends who were saying, hey, I've got a conference in San Francisco. You want to see if we can connect somewhere in the middle? Like it's, you know, like it's a half hour away. And so that's a big thing. You live your a sizable chunk of your adult life somewhere and then move, even if it's moving back to where family and friends might be, it's still huge. It's still a big thing. And the other thing is that as far as depression goes, you're kidding yourself if you don't think you know someone who is dealing with that right now, because a lot of people,
yes,
pretend that they're okay, yes, put on a mask that they're doing just fine. And I'm not a doctor or psychiatrist, mm-hmm, or anything. I have dealt with it for myself and, mm-hmm, for people who were close to me that have it. And it's tough.
Yeah, it is really tough. And it's mental health is just so, it's so important. It's so important. I think it just needs more attention. And in this society that we live in America, this go, 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 accomplish, 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 accomplish. I think it's really hard when you, if you have a temperament and an emotional makeup that needs more scaffolding built in to your days in order to manage your emotions, this is not the place.
Yeah.
Doesn't allow for a lot of mend and repair. And yeah.
I was across the street. It's a highway, but I was in a complex that's across on the other side of the highway from the Pentagon on September 11th. I wasn't inside. I didn't know anybody who was. I didn't know anyone who was on the planes. I didn't know anybody in any of the other situations. I just was part of the car stampede to get out. And I saw the Pentagon in flames in my rearview mirror as I'm driving with a million other people going, you know, rolling 2 feet and stopping. And it was horrible. And I felt guilty about having any kind of trauma associated with that, because, mm-hmm, I wasn't attacked. I didn't know anyone who did. I didn't know anybody in either of the other attacks that day. I was close to something bad that happened. And I felt guilty for feeling any sort of trauma. So, mm-hmm, it's tough. What do you do with that? And you're right. It's a go, go, go kind of world we live, mm-hmm, in. And I had to get it together and go to work the next day and do, you know, and try and put on the happy face of everything is going to be okay. And it is hard. And I still, this time of year is tough for me. And social media is full of pictures that I don't want to see. And it, mm-hmm, so many people who were not anywhere near there are saying, never forget. And I'd love to forget personally. And I don't mean that, save your emails. I'm not belittling anything anybody else went through. I'm talking about for me. And it is tough to deal with that. And even 25 years later, and I'm sure that so many people out there, mm-hmm, at least one person you know, is dealing with something somewhat similar that they're handling the best they can, and they're putting on a happy face so nobody else knows. And it's tough. And I don't know what the answer is, because there's such a stigma about it. And it's, you know, people don't want to talk about it, and people don't write songs about it. And kudos to you for writing a song about how you feel and what it's like, at least for you. It's a tough thing to talk about and to deal with.
Yeah, the brain is incredible, and it needs care and attention. Can I share a story about 2011?
Absolutely. Sure.
And it's something that I've been working to process for so many years. So a couple of weeks before 9/11, I was at the gym and in Los Angeles, living in Los Angeles at the time. And there was there's so much pressure to be so thin down there. And I was, I don't know, probably like 122 pounds. And that was not acceptable. Like, I felt like it wasn't acceptable. And I mean, I'm 5'5". That's perfectly acceptable weight. And I was working out really, really hard at the gym. And I was looking around at all of these people who were also so thin and working so hard. And I was warming up on my treadmill, kind of walking, and this gentleman next to me, probably in his late 50s, early 60s, was having trouble figuring out the treadmill. So I helped him. I was saying, okay, you just do this and you do this and, you know, maybe start off slow. And he was fine. He was fine. And I revved up my treadmill, and all of a sudden he just flew off the treadmill and was having a massive heart attack. Okay. And I jumped off my treadmill, let them know at the front desk. They called 911, and I just sat there and I held his hand while we were waiting for the medics to arrive. And what I noticed during that time, it was all in slow motion. It felt like it was just taking forever for the medics to arrive. And I'm looking around at people in the first three rows of the treadmills. They had just topped off and they went into the other room. Like, ooh, get me away from that. Like, which to me was so indicative of LA. It's like, avoid reality, avoid reality, avoid. And I just watched everybody flee. And nobody showed concern other than the people that were working at the gym. And anyway, I felt the moment that his body, he left his body. I could feel the energy. It was so palpable. I can't explain it. I just knew. And the medics came, and they did all of the things, and he had passed. He had passed. And I was paralyzed. I was just paralyzed. And I went into the women's locker room and I just sat. I couldn't even move. And I don't know how long I was in there, but his wife had come in. Apparently they had gotten a hold of her. And when I was leaving, she came in and they told her the news, and her knees just buckled, and it was like this. No, it was just so awful. I'll never forget that sound. And I, a struggling artist, I think I had four jobs at the time. I was exhausted all the time. I had to go to work. I just had to. And I remember taking a shower when I got home and just sobbing in the shower. It was like, and it was an existential realization that all of these things that I am prioritizing, all these things that I think are so important, are not important. I understood the thin veil between here and the other side. But I had to carry on, and I didn't have money for, I mean, when you're an independent contractor or you're working part-time, you don't have health insurance. So I didn't have anybody to talk to about what had happened and to help me process it. And yet I felt like I shared something so intimate with this person holding their hand while they crossed over. And it was not my place to get in touch with his wife or, you know, whatever. I just carried on. And then 9/11 happened a couple weeks later. And my sister had called me on 9/11 to tell me that she was pregnant. She had just found out that she was pregnant with my niece, my first niece. And anyway, it was just so much to process. It was just like a compounding experience of, oh my gosh, the world is not a safe place. And then it was interesting because a couple weeks later, I went to get my hair done in the little shop that was right next to my gym, where that man had passed. And the hairdressers were gossiping. The lady who was doing my hair was gossiping with the other hairdresser. And they started kind of getting really snarky, bitchy, mean. And I started feeling really, really dizzy. And I started like feeling like I couldn't hold myself together. It was like a feeling of, what am I doing here? There's so much nonsense and these people have no idea what's important and what it's like, a false world. And why is the world so cruel? And I fainted. And they were freaked out. And it was odd because I couldn't move and I couldn't open my eyes, but I could still hear what was going on. It was such a strange feeling. And all I could hear was the hairdresser is working on my hair. Oh God, is she one of those people that doesn't eat? Is she, because I was very, very thin. Is she somebody, what's wrong with her? Oh my God, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And it was very shamey, the way that she was responding to me fainting. And then I remember this voice saying, are you okay? Are you okay? And I shot up and I said, yes, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. And it was one of the women in there who was getting her hair done. And she just very gently said, I am a therapist. I'm a mental health therapist. And let me help you. Are you okay? And she just sat there and I don't remember exactly what she said, but it was basically, are you alone? What do you have going on today? You shouldn't be alone. You need to have somebody with you who cares about you. And she gave me her phone number and she said, I want you to know that you did not come to until I asked if you were okay. And she kept in touch with me for a couple of weeks. I went home. My boyfriend at the time, you know, was with me and I was taken care of. But she basically gave me this awareness of your mental health is very important. And what really struck me was that you are not okay. Maybe you don't know it, but you're not okay. And you just needed somebody to ask you if you were okay. I recommend that you go to a therapist. And, but you know what? years later, that still, it was the beginning of me realizing that I didn't feel like I belonged in Los Angeles, but I had to hang in there because of my love of music and my passion for it. And, but there was so much misogyny in the music business. There was so much disrespect for women. I felt like no matter how hard I worked, no matter how good I was, no matter, oh my gosh, no matter how thin I was, no matter how, you know, pretty I tried to be or whatever, you were, I don't know, like dehumanized in some way. You were an object. I felt like an object. And anyway, so, you know, I'm still, and this is what I'm saying is the compounding stressors when you don't, when you can't afford to get help, and when you, or when you refuse to get help, or you just keep plugging away in this culture that we live in of you carry on, you soldier on, you know, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and you go to work and you do all this. This is what breaks people down mentally.
Yeah.
And what happened to you with the Pentagon, that absolutely is a trauma deserving of care and attention and talking through, and the guilt that you felt. I mean, first of all, the things that we feel guilty about are, there's no shame in feeling, oh my gosh, these people, all of these lives destroyed. And that is a trauma.
I think, you know, I had said that everybody listening to this knows somebody who is dealing with this. I think the truth is that everybody has something.
Yeah.
That they have been through and handled it in most cases, handled it the best way that they could, mm-hmm. and soldiered on, and don't even think about that. That's something that has, for better or worse, made you who you are today, mm-hmm. and you're still dealing with it on some level. I think that because there's such a negative connotation about any sort of mental health issues, people shy away from that. And, you know, when you're talking about this man who had this heart attack and how everybody sort of cleared the room, I wish that was just an LA thing, but mm-hmm. I think that's becoming more and more pervasive in society, where you feel like, I don't want to be near that because I might catch it.
Yeah.
Something bad happens. I just want to know that it's not going to touch me, and I don't want to deal with it. I don't know who that is. I don't know what their problems are. I'm rolling up my window and driving past that guy with the sign. I don't even know what it says. I don't want to think about it. I just want to deal with whatever it is.
On my plate today and on my to-do list. And, you know, I have to say that it feels good to be up in Northern California. Again, I grew up in a town in Rockland, California, which is, it's very built out now, but it was a really small cow town when I was growing up here. And the medical community up here is huge. And the health profession is very, very caring and empathetic. And what I find up here is that that kind of thing doesn't happen. Like, I just can't, and I've recognized that coming back here, that I cannot believe the kindness up here and how much I have missed it. And so I think in contrast to living anywhere else, LA or, you know, no matter where it may be, I feel very blessed to be back in California. There's, you know, Sutter Roseville Hospital, and my mom worked in healthcare. My sister works in healthcare, and it's just a different, it's such a compassionate profession. And there's so many people up here that work in that profession. So I think, you know, in my, you know, popsicle stick brain at 22, you know? Yeah. I was like, where are the people who care? Yeah.
You know, I think about that day in Washington 25 years ago, more than I want to. especially at this time of year. And if I mean, it was, phones were out. We were not a smartphone society just yet, but regular landlines were down. And cell service, I was one of the elite that had a cell phone, but cell service was not reliable. And my and cell phones were not what they are today. So my battery was already compromised at 9 a.m. So I didn't know how much longer I was going to have cell service or a phone that would turn on. And we're getting all of these fake reports. You think fake news is bad now, but we're getting all of these reports, and people on the radio were reading them because somebody called it in and nobody knew what was going on. And I heard so many other reports of attacks that didn't happen, didn't exist, but who knew? And it was just, it was unlike anything, I would say unlike anything I'd ever experienced. Of course it was. It was unlike anything anybody in America had ever been through, wherever you are. And I just, you know, I called a couple people that I loved and made sure they were okay. And I went out and got in traffic and you know, and did the best I could. And the next day I went to work and did the best I could. And I put on as happy a face as you could. It was dark times around the Washington, D.C. area, certainly in the days and weeks after that. Months and months after that, going into D.C., you would see the patrols on, you know, with the giant anti-aircraft guns going in or coming out of Washington, D.C., and it just became a fixture there. And so you're reminded, if you work there, you're reminded every day, whether you drive by the Pentagon or not. Yeah, and it was...
You're getting a trigger.
Yeah. And it was... And I'm sure I'm not the only one.
Right.
And really, I know I shouldn't feel guilty about the trauma that I feel from that. And I'm sure that there are plenty of others who were nowhere near any of the sites that were attacked. Just seeing what you could see on TV and hearing about it, it was tough. And that gets into your psyche and it gets into a part of who you are. And
yeah. You know, I remember, I think one of the more traumatic things for me was when our president at the time said, go shopping, live your lives, go, you know, and I just thought it was so incredibly insensitive.
It was.
I understood. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And I'm certainly not a fan of that president, but I will tell you that once I finally did get home, and it was, I don't know, 3:30 maybe. I mean, I left Washington 10 o'clock or so. So a normal commute that would take maybe 45 minutes took me 5, 6, 7 hours because of the way the traffic was. And I got home and we went to Chili's for dinner because I just wanted something normal. I just needed that normalcy. So I understand the go shopping and get back to your life. But I also get how awful and insensitive that sounds. This was a huge, horrible thing. And you're telling me to
me,
go
it
to
seems
Target.
Like, let's keep the economy going.
It's yeah.
That's kind of how I read that. I understood, but it seemed like it was wrapped in in an agenda.
Yes. I've seen, I'm sure everybody has seen the meme where there's a meteor coming down toward Earth and the dinosaurs are saying, oh my God, the economy. Yeah. This podcast isn't to help anybody heal from your traumas. I will just, we're going to move on, but I just want to say you're not alone. And I think it's terrific that you wrote, recorded, and released this song because it's, a topic people don't want to talk about and don't want to acknowledge and run away from because they don't want to catch it. And and I'm glad that this is out there. The other single that you released before the Christmas song is Come Down.
Yes.
And where did that one come from?
Well, actually from a very similar place. I mean, when I moved back up north, you know, and this is where these songs came from, it was, I spent a good year and a half decompressing from all of those years in Los Angeles. And I think in contrast to, you know, being in what I feel for me, for my soul, is a healthy environment up here, you know, surrounded by trees. I mean, I grew up just like writing songs under trees. Any chance I got. I mean, it lunch in school, I was that strange kid sitting under a tree writing a song and coming up with melodies and, you know, just so nature really inspires me because it's quiet, it's healing. And anyway, I think in contrast, being up here, I was able to process some of my trauma from being, you know, part of the music industry and being on the fringe too for so many years in the music industry. I mean, that climb is very treacherous for a young person, for a young woman. And it was interesting because while I was in therapy and processing a lot of things that happened during those years, I was obsessed with aviation disasters. I was just obsessed with learning from these documentaries about how these, you know, these horrible crashes happened. And, you know, they have to like try to like deconstruct and reconstruct these aviation disasters to try to prevent them in the future after they happen. And I was imagining what it would be like to have been a passenger in one of those planes on 9/11 or, you know, in one of these aviation disasters, and you're going along just fine. Everything seems fine. You're looking out the window, puffy cumulus clouds, and it's sunny, and you're off to your destination, and you're looking forward to it, and whack, something happens. You've got a terrorist on board. You've got turbulence that is never ending. And I think that I was deconstructing my own trauma and going, what caused that crash? What were the things that led up to that situation? What were the things that ruined that opportunity? Or I was trying to make sense of it. And so Come Down is like right before the crash, like you're going along and you're thinking everything is just fine. And then you realize that this person is only working with you because they want you to be their mistress, or, you know, they want you to, you know, all of those things and the shock of that, you know. And I was thinking about people, you know, they find out that their spouse is cheating on them. They find out that, and how that feels. You got a smile on your face. The sun is out. Everything is beautiful. And then the rug gets pulled out. So those songs are very closely related.
Yeah. It seems like from those songs to Jingle Jangle is a giant jump.
I'm a big fan of escapism. Gets me through.
The new single, which is just out, and it's you can find it everywhere you stream and download music, is an acoustic version of Jingle Jangle, a song that you wrote and originally recorded almost 10 years ago. And I love what you wrote on Facebook, that you had said when you recorded the original song that you felt like you channeled Dolly Parton while you were making that record.
Oh, yeah.
And
how
so for you, for the artist?
When I was a child, she had this country special on TV, and I would watch her and think that I wanted her to be my auntie. And I wanted to, she was so gentle and she was so fun and she was so, oh gosh. I mean, she was like the sun. She was like the sun or something. She was so sparkly and glamorous. And I loved being a girly girl. I loved all the sparkles in that. I remember going to the fair once and getting one of those little flower, you know, crowns. And I felt so beautiful and I felt like so feminine and I thought I was a fairy. And she was, to me, she embodied this childlike, fantastical, but yet very womanly. And she was so non-threatening. I just wanted her to be my auntie. And I loved watching her. It was her energy. It was, and her voice was so sweet and so kind, and her spirit. And I think she's in, I mean, really, all of the Christmas stuff that I've done is so inspired by her. She's, her playfulness. Oh gosh, you know, I envied, as I got older, her ability to, I read something, you know, recently where she was working on a steel magnolias, I guess. And I don't know, somebody on the set said, a director or something said, "Dolly, do you even know how to act?" And she said, "No, but it's your job to make me look like I do." And she played. She just played with the darkness and made it, I mean, wham, she just points out, like, you know, this is coming back on you, buddy. I just loved her. And I remember when we were writing Jingle Jangle, John and I, and when I had finished the vocal and we were mixing, I said, gosh, I feel like we have just channeled Dolly Parton in this song. And John wasn't all that familiar with Dolly. He didn't at the time realize how incredible she said. He said, "Dolly Parton, I'm not hip. I'm not like," and I said, "Oh my gosh, she's just the most incredible songwriter." And he said, "Really?" I mean, and then when we did "Tis the Season," at the end of the song, when I say, when I do that little speaking part in the end, that was so Dolly influenced. Yeah. I mean, she's in my heart. I just never thought she would go. I feel like there's just this big, gigantic hole in the universe. But yet, she's, what a contrast. I mean, that woman never took all those millions of dollars and bought a yacht.
She didn't go into space?
No, she bought kids' books. And
yeah.
Yeah, her philanthropy is unmatched. She's such an inspiration.
You know, I didn't think of Dolly Parton when I listen to your Christmas music. But now that you say that, I think about the original version of Jingle Jangle. And while it doesn't sound like a Dolly song, it has that energy like with Bells On.
Yeah.
It just has that joyful, fun, I'm so happy Christmas is coming kind of feel to it that she captured in those songs she did with Kenny Rogers and in so many songs since then. And I think it's a great testament to you that there have been so many millions of streams of that song and that it has shown up in so many movies or TV shows just in the past 8-9 years. I think that's terrific. And I know that while stuff comes together quickly, I don't imagine that it was Dolly's passing that made you revisit the song. Was there anything in particular that led you to put together an acoustic version?
Well, back in, I think it was in May, I had called John, and I had the idea that, look, we're at 5 million streams on this little independent. I mean, it has not been added to any Spotify editorials. There have been no playlist pushes. I mean, I have not paid for anything for those streams. It's all been completely organic, which is amazing. And I said, I think we should celebrate. We should celebrate this and do. I kind of wanted to do like an acoustic version, but with the, what is it, the, do, like that, from that song from Home Alone. What am I thinking?
White Christmas, the Drifters.
That, okay. Yeah. And I wanted it to be kind of dopey, like, I don't know. I love horses. I'm just in awe of horses, and I just imagine like those are the horses singing in that song. Again, popsicle stick brain over here. So, and John, and then it took us until we decided to, our good friend Gene Siegel, he also lives up here now, and John lives up here, and I said, who better than Gene to play guitars on this? And so, John stripped it down, Gene did the guitars, and then John has, he's a huge fan of the Beach Boys. So he kind of put on this, did in, instead of doing those dopey horses, he did that Beach Boys thing, which is also what he did on Tis the Season. And it just came out so cute. I think it's just so cute. It's just the cute, it's more like a California Christmas type of sound now with the Beach Boys on that. And so it had been done for about a month and a half, and then Dolly passed, and I was just so grateful for her influence and her I mean, what a person we had.
Yeah, we sure did. I have said more than once that while many are sad of her passing, and I am too, I am also grateful that I got to be here when Dolly Parton was here. I think about so many amazing artists whose heyday may have been, either before my time or when I was too young to pay attention. Frank Sinatra comes to mind. And it was, I mean, it was great that I got to be here when Frank was here, but I would like to have been here earlier and gone to see him with, some of those amazing shows that he did. And there are lots of artists like that. But Dolly was something else. Dolly was more than just a singer, just an actress. The outpouring that we have seen since she passed from all walks of life across all genres. Eminem was got a note from her that she was at his I think was it, I don't remember the details, a lot of these blend together, but that she cared enough to send him a message that she didn't get to meet him that particular time, but just that she cared enough to do that. And
Yes, and I think that that is, I mean, I'm big on communication, and I've always loved communicators like that. I mean, Dolly, Amy Grant, the great communicators. And what I find in my own life is that a lot of people don't get back to you when you do those things, but it's important to do that anyway, because people, I think there's this, and especially in the entertainment industry, it's like this, I'm too cool for that. I'm too cool for, I'm above that. I don't need reassurance. I don't need, I don't need anything from anybody. And that kind of spirit built in so much goodwill. And it's important. It's important to make to that you see people and that you make people feel seen. I just don't understand this culture of ghosting and to see that Dolly did that and the impact that it made. Clearly, it made an impact because these letters are showing up.
Yeah.
So I just want to say to people, if you think that it doesn't matter, that your communication doesn't matter, that your acknowledgments don't matter because somebody doesn't get back to you, it matters.
Not to blow my own horn, and I hope this doesn't come across as too self-serving, but every year I am always so grateful and really amazed that some artists come back to advertise again. I always say something going into the season that I'm so grateful for these people. And usually shortly after Christmas, sometimes not very long after Christmas, I email everybody that advertised and thank them and let them know if they want to come back. I will get them a special deal. But mostly, I just want to say thanks for making this happen. Because really, without you, without other singers and bands, I there would be no Sounds of Christmas. And I am grateful for that. I'm just a guy who loves Christmas music and wanted to do this. And without the artists, it's nothing. I never, and I hope that I never get to that point where I take it for granted. I've been doing, this is coming up on the Sounds of Christmas's 20th season.
Wow.
And I feel very much wow that I can't believe that people like it enough that it's still going. Singers and bands make time, whether they're advertising, whether they're just sending me music, whether they're making time like you did today to come on and talk about a lot more than just the Christmas single, but also the Christmas song. It means so very much, and I'm so grateful. And I don't ever want to lose that. And I am absolutely not trying to compare myself to Dolly Parton. That's a high bar, and I'll keep reaching, but that's not what.
Isn't
that's
that beautiful?
About.
How her legacy reminds us of that.
Yeah.
Like I've been thinking, oh my gosh, there's so many areas where I can do better. I can do better here. I can do better. You know, be more like Dolly. And you are so appreciated, Ken. I just want to say that, you know, you were one of the first to champion the Celebrate album, and it has always meant so much to me. I am just very grateful to you for all of your support.
Well, and you know, not to make this that kind of show, but I'm very grateful to you for coming on this podcast. I don't know how many times that you've been on, but this is at least the third time, probably more, to talk about our mutual love of Christmas music, and to be so kind as to put up with my badgering you about when's the next Christmas thing coming out, which I haven't asked yet, but I will before you go. But that you come on, and you know, I mentioned that quote from Aaron earlier, and it's so true, because I see you showing up on different people's blogs to talk about Christmas music and stuff, and I see you around embracing the community, and I hope being embraced by the community. There is I hang out with, I sometimes lovingly refer them to them as my Christmas weirdo friends, but it's people who who all love Christmas and Christmas music more than most people think possible. And I posted the other day, earlier this week, when I saw your post on Facebook about the new single coming out, I posted to let them all know in the new releases thing that Rhea has a new single coming out. It's going to be everywhere, and it's going to be everywhere this Friday, which always gets Christmas music people excited because we're talking about Labor Day weekend having something new. And I know that there are plenty of people, probably not those listening to this kind of podcast, but there are plenty of people who like who will say, oh, it's too early to think about Christmas, blah, blah, blah. Fine, you don't have to, but you don't have to be nasty about it when I am. I don't know. Let me try. My camera is a little wonky and this doesn't do anything for anybody who is listening. But
aww.
The shirt that I'm wearing today is Snoopy and a Santa thing. With the Santa beard and the Santa hat. And I'm not wearing this to impress Rhea. I'm wearing this because I felt like wearing it today. And I wore this when I went grocery shopping. And I was very pleased that even though the store was very crowded and several people did double takes, nobody said it's too early for that. And I know it's early September and it's not. And we haven't gotten to Halloween or Thanksgiving yet. I know all of that. So don't save your emails. But sometimes you just need a little Christmas music spirit.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm here and that's why I do this. So now I can ask, what else is coming up for you?
Well, I have a new EP coming out. It's looking like it's slated for mid-October. And I'll just tell you it's called Black Dog Leaving the 405. And it's 7 songs. Black Dog and Come Down obviously are on that. And kind of a dark pop record, kind of about you know when you losing your naivete kind of seeing. I felt like there was a lot of I study people a lot. I'm fascinated by human behavior, and I felt like I could see around me in the entertainment industry the house of cards that was being built around these constructs of that, you know, how it kind of how dreams can turn into nightmares really, you know, and people can have all of the success and all of these the wealth and all of those things that are outwardly, you know, prove that you're a successful human being, but there's like parts of the soul that have atrophied, and there's an empty, you know, just what it takes to get there, the things that people do to get there. So it's a reflection of that and a lot about my own healing journey of leaving that world physically. I mean, obviously I'm still doing music and still doing all that, but just getting out of that environment has been so good for me. I mean, my nervous system has just like regulated, I think, for the first time in 20 years. And so that's what that's about. And then, yes, I do have new Christmas songs that I have written and am working on. And they will be, those will be following. So I love making Christmas music. Yeah.
And I love that you don't mind that I badger you about it because
I love it.
And you know, there's a couple reasons for that. One, your stuff's really good. But the other thing is that I get a ton of Christmas music sent to me every year. And it's getting worse because now I'm having to figure out if it's AI or not. But
oh, dear.
And I know that there are going to be a lot of covers of Hard Candy Christmas coming this year. But When I listen to new Christmas stuff, one of the things I look for is, do I believe it?
Yeah.
Because there's so often, you know, you talk about the industry and there's so much stuff that I get sent that sounds like the singer or the band had half an hour of studio time left and they said, okay, we've got time left, knock out Jingle Bell Rock, and they phone it in. And it doesn't sound, and I listen to yours and I believe you. It sounds like what you're singing means something to you, that you believe it. And I wish that wasn't rare, but it kind of is. And there are so often that you hear stuff from an artist and it just doesn't sound like their heart's in it. Mm. And I got a version of, I think it was Rock Around the Clock a few years ago, by an artist whose name I'm not going to mention, but she was a pretty big name in late 80s, early 90s pop. And I don't want to say who she is because this is also it's opinion. But I was excited to get this Christmas single from her, and I listened to it and I thought, if I didn't know, could be anybody. And it's very paint by numbers. It's almost note for note Brenda Lee. And it just doesn't sound like anybody else. And I get so much of that stuff. And when I listen to your Christmas music, it's like you did that on purpose. You didn't, you know, nobody made you do it. You're not trying to emulate something that you're not. You're singing something that you believe. And every one of your songs is not a holly jolly Christmas kind of happy stuff, because everybody's not experiencing that at Christmas time. And you run through so many different scenarios and emotions and all that kind of stuff. And it just feels like, and I'm not trying to, you know, pump you up or anything, but it just feels like your stuff is real and it means something to you and you're singing it on purpose and you believe it. And that is where the magic comes in. And it just doesn't happen enough for me. So that's why I get so excited to see that you have something new out and that you're working on new stuff. And that's why I am such a pain that I keep pestering you about when the next thing is going to come up, and that I will send you messages or emails about, hey, I had this great idea that you should do, or any of that kind of stuff.
I love that. I love it. And the fact that, I mean, honestly, I feel like, and even especially in recording, I mean, a lot of people, and I find this with a lot of musicians, it's like they lay down their parts and then they want the singer to just finish it up really quickly and good enough and let's get it out there. And especially in music for film and TV, it's like, you know, well, if they use it as a background use, it doesn't really matter that it's perfect or this or that. But I cannot rest until I feel that mix and that vocal and the musicians and everything is just like, I want it to be a masterpiece. In my mind, it's so important. You are creating worlds when you're making music. If you're not going to have the respect for it to really give the listener an experience, take a break or don't do it. You know, I mean, I just love it. I love the process. I love being an artist. I love caring about it. I love working with people who care about it. I mean, of course, you know, there's a point where you can, you know, kind of overdo things, but Aaron said in a blog, was it Aaron? No, it was actually you know, who's the guy that's just like that brilliant writer and used to be a DJ? Why am I blanking? Anyway, he said, you know, most of the things that come across my desk, most of the Christmas songs that come across my desk sound like old chewing gum. And I thought, yeah, I mean, and in the film and TV world, a lot of people reach out to me and say, hey, let's write a Christmas song. And I can sense that they just see the success that I've had and they want to have an evergreen, you know, and it takes so much energy to pitch the music and to do all the things. And but that energy for me comes from the pride in what I'm making, that I'm excited to share it and I want as many people to hear it as possible because I love it so much. You know, so I'm, you know, when people reach out to me that don't, I just can feel like it's just kind of an opportunity grab. It's not something that they're passionate about. I mean, I really love it. I love Christmas music. I'm excited every Christmas. As soon as fall starts to come and it's breezy outside, it's on. I love that you're wearing your shirt, your Snoopy shirt. Makes me happy.
I think that, and I've seen this coming for a long time, that the music industry, record labels are dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And it's to the it, it's gotten to the point now where an independent artist like you can do your own thing and have millions of streams without, like you said, without playlist, begging people to put it on playlists, without doing all that other stuff, and have your music in movies, have movie people come to you. I mean, that is amazing, and I hope that some young artist or more than one who listen to this podcast episode hear that and realize that they can do it too. You don't have to go the traditional route. Gosh, technology has gotten to the point where it is easier to record in your garage or your basement and have it sound good. It doesn't have to be at, well, I don't want the record labels to be too mad at me, so I won't mention specific ones, but it doesn't have to be in downtown LA in some giant building in one of 106 different studios that they have in there. It doesn't have to be that. It can be, you know, it can be whatever you want it to be. That's
Yeah,
what I
it just
mean.
needs to be, it needs to be good, it needs to be well done. And
Yeah.
I mean I mean I have so much gratitude for the fact that there is this landscape available. I mean, but I do kind of romanticize what it might have been like to have had support. And you know, back in the day when they, you know, the labels had really intelligent, savvy A&R that worked with an artist through the first five, six albums until they got to the big winner, because those developmental years are vital. They're so important to your growth and development as an artist. I have so many songs that grew me into the artist that I am today. I mean, a lot of them haven't been released. And I have a lot of songs that I plan to release that I just haven't had time to release because releases take a lot of time and a lot of energy. And so the labels kind of taking that burden off of the artist is amazing, and to have all of that support. But with streaming, there's just not enough money in it for the labels, you know? So anyway, I mean, I just think that to be an artist, it's not just about the brass ring. It's not just about making that. It's about being an artist and trusting the process and going through it and putting out albums in it. I mean, I would say to anybody, you have to enjoy the process, work with people that you love and who love you and who believe in you, support each other. Because if the motivation is always external, and if it's always coming from the success that you have, it has to be less extrinsic and more intrinsic motivation for you to do that. I mean, my Tis the Season album, I did not have the budget to promote that one. In was 2021 is when I released that. I feel like some of my best Christmas songs are on that album. And I just didn't have the budget, but boy, did I love making that album. And I love those songs, and I'm so proud of those songs. And they are still so special to me. And I wish that that album would have had more success, and maybe it will in the future. But would I have skipped over making it? No. No, I loved making that one. And I love Santa's Taken Over the Town too. You know, I had a bigger budget with Celebrate to work with, because John and I, you know, we that was all worked out, you know, and I just didn't have the budget after that to market it. And that does matter in film and TV. You know, they want you to have the PR behind it.
Right.
So,
What's the best way for people to keep up with you? Is it your website, social media? Do they need to just move to Northern California?
everybody move here and let's have Christmas together. There's lots of woods around here. We can decorate trees. Now, you can follow me on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook. My website has a lot of content on there that you can kind of go through if you want to read interviews or reviews, or there's just a lot of fun stuff on there. You can always email me as well. So,
Okay. I'm not going to put your email in the show notes because reasons, but I will put a link to your website. I'm guessing, I don't remember, but I'm guessing that there are links on your website to your social media stuff. Okay, so people can go to whichever social media thing that you prefer, and there's a good chance that Rhea is there. So follow her and be listening for, you don't have to wait till the Sounds of Christmas new season starts on November 1st, but we're in September. You don't have to wait. You can go to any streaming site right now and find the new acoustic version of Jingle Jangle. And then you can compare it to the other one. And then you can buy them all, which I think is what you need to do. Rhea, is there anything that I missed that you wish I would have asked you about?
Oh my goodness, this has been really enjoyable. I have loved this conversation, and I didn't come into it with any big expectations, or so I thank you. Thank you for having me. And
You are very welcome. Thank you so much. This has been terrific. I always enjoy talking to you, and I'm
oh,
delighted
likewise.
that there's a new Christmas song and that there's more coming. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Ken. It's great to see you.
And thank you so much for listening, helping us share some Christmas spirit, and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I already told you how to listen to the station, and you're listening to the podcast now, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page that lists most, if not all, of the sites that stream the Sounds of Christmas podcast. So you can click on that, scroll down and find your favorite, then click on over and subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again. And may you always believe in Santa Claus.